Hey everyone, this is Adam Ellenboss from Nightlight Astrology, and today I'm going to be joined by my friend and colleague Alex Amorosi to discuss your horoscopes for the month of October. We are going to be looking at two major transits in particular this month. One will be the solar eclipse in the sign of Libra that's coming on the 14th. The other one will be the lunar eclipse in Taurus, really the last eclipse of the Taurus-Scorpio cycle, coming later in the month on the 28th. We will look at those for all 12 signs. I recommend listening for your rising sign because that's going to correlate to the whole sign house version of your birth chart, give you an accurate feel for where that eclipse is actually landing in your birth chart. But if you're someone who likes sun sign horoscopes, go ahead and listen to the sign that you prefer. So that is our agenda for today. Before we get into it, as always, don't forget to like and subscribe. It really helps the channel to grow when you guys also share your comments and reflections in the comment section. It kind of creates a community feeling as well, which we really appreciate. Love hearing the stories that you guys have to share, the wisdom and insights and questions that you have. So please feel free to be social in the comments. You can find a transcript of today's talk on the website, nightlightastrology.com. And I'm going to do some promoting of a few different things today. But first, I want to welcome Alex to the show today.
Adam!
Welcome back. It's good to be back. It's eclipse season. This is going to be a good one.
It is. It's a juicy eclipse season. A lot of interesting things going on with it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because, as you know, we're making this and looking forward to halfway through the month and toward the end of the month. Mm-hmm. But before we even get there, we have to go through Mars over the South Node, Mars square Pluto. There's a lot of action leading up to the eclipse, even that's pretty dynamic. So paying attention to that Libra house is going to be paramount for us today for all 12 signs, but also the Taurus house, both Venus ruled places in the chart, really getting a lot of attention. Makes sense as Venus is finishing her retrograde as well. So kind of the culmination of a lot of Venusian stuff that's been active really over the whole course of the summer.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And especially with Venus moving into Virgo ruling the eclipses, there's a, we could say a lot about dignities there, but I feel like it's a very detailed punctuation mark on Venus's retrograde cycle. No one does detail like Virgo. So I think that there's going to be an interesting combination there with that.
Yeah. If you think about Venus and Virgo's love for order, which can sometimes be Venus and Virgo's downfall, you also think about Venus and Libra in particular being the exaltation of Saturn. And that's also a sign that really privileges things being sort of pristine. And so I wonder about the ideal that Venus presents us with and how capable things are of living up to that ideal. Mm-hmm. That's one theme that just strikes me right away as probably important this month, but we'll get into that. Mm-hmm. So we're going to promote a few things today before we get started. The first thing that I want to promote for you guys is my upcoming class, Ancient Astrology for the Modern Mystic. Alex, you're an alumni of this program. It starts on November 18th. Do you want to say anything about your experience taking this class?
Well, you know, it was the first formal class I took on astrology, and I wasn't really quite sure if I wanted to study formally because I felt like, all right, I'm getting a lot of stuff from YouTube and from books and whatever. But when I'm telling you guys, Adam puts together, and I've taught programs for 20 years, you know, teaching programs, spiritual programs for 20 years. Adam puts together an incredible, comprehensive course. Like, you're like digging through all the extra materials for like all these little pearls of wisdom. It's just amazing. And it's super comprehensive. It's super well put together. And most importantly, I think as someone who practices now professionally, it gave me a really solid basis, Adam, to feel confident to read a chart. Before that, I was a little bit like, I don't know how to put this together. But one thing that you do, of a number of things you do really well, is show somebody step by step what to look at, why they're looking at it, which is really important, and then how to sort of synthesize it all together. Because when you're first starting out, it can be really overwhelming when all the symbols appear on the screen to how to synthesize it, and put it into a cohesive meaning.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you. I should ask you to talk about what you like about my course more often, because I just like, that's really nice. That's nice to hear that.
There's no course I've ever taken more than any course.
Right.
Adam Ellenboss is year one astrology course.
Yeah. I mean, there's, so for people, Alex was, you know, an amazing student, also like really put his whole heart into the program, which is why he's a successful full-time astrologer now, having come out of this program, but also adding more learning and development to his study of astrology in other ways too. I feel like Nightlight is a course that can help you get the foundational understanding of the history of astrology, the underlying why we do things in the way we do, what are the different schools of astrology, why do they work in the ways that they work. And a lot of people find that it's just really nice to have a structured program that sort of guides you through the whole field in a sense, while also giving you a specific approach that comes from ancient Greek Hellenistic astrologers, as well as a kind of modern archetypal psychology background. There's 30 classes on the year. They're all held via live webinars. You can attend live or download all the materials. So it's very flexible in that respect. We have breakout study sessions led by our tutors. There's a forum discussion where you can ask questions from a staff of tutors. You can reach out to me at any point during the program through email. There's tons of bonus material. There's a workbook. There's optional quizzes. There's bonus videos. There's optional reading assignments. I mean, it's really as much or as little as you want, whether you're going professional and that's your goal, or you just want to be able to read charts for yourself and people that are close to you. It's a great program. We really recommend that you go through the first and second year programs to be professionally equipped. But by year one, you'll be able to start reading charts. And that's for a lot of people, you know, that's going to be a lifelong asset. At the bottom of the page, you'll find enrollment options. Early bird saves you $500 off. There's a payment plan you can use to spread out your payments over a year. There's also need-based tuition assistance. Please feel free to take advantage of that if you are someone who really wants to take a course like this but has to work within a fixed budget, whether that means you're a single parent, you're working only part-time, or you're a family that's on a very fixed income. We understand that people come from a variety of different economic backgrounds. We ask that if you can afford the full price, you pay it. And if you can't but you still want to take the program, use the tuition assistance. We feel like no one should be priced out of something as cool and spiritually beneficial as studying astrology. So that's the first thing we're going to promote. The second thing we're going to promote today is an event that is coming up at Astrology Hub that I think you guys will also find really exciting. So if you go over to astrologyhub.com, you're going to find a lot of content, classes, teachers, readings that I think you'll benefit from. I have worked for them. A lot of my friends, colleagues, and even alumni from my programs have worked for Astrology Hub. I like them because they're a platform that gives space for a lot of diverse forms and voices in astrology, while also being, Amanda, who has come on the show before, is the owner, founder, CEO. She is someone who really treasures people who come from a spiritual point of view with astrology, that are trying to say, here's how we use this to heal, grow, and develop as spiritual beings. So I've gotten to know her in person. I've gotten to know her staff. I've worked with them. I really trust the content that they create. Even if all of the astrologers that work for them aren't necessarily coming from the same place that I am, I like that they're an ecumenical hub for safe astrology that's in integrity. So I've been happy to promote their work. I want to take you over, and this link is down there. It's kind of a big link, so I don't expect you to necessarily just easily whip this up, but they have an event coming up, and this link will be in the comments section as well as the description of this video. This is their 8th annual astrology forecast event for 2024. It's free, and you can, it starts, the event is actually October 12th at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, but I think you guys would like this. I've actually participated in this before on this panel in a previous year where we looked at the astrology of the year ahead, and you're going to hear from a variety of really interesting and diverse astrologers: Rachel Lang, Christopher Renstrom, Clarissa Dolphin, Sheridan Semple, Mark Borax, Amanda Pua Walsh. And these are astrologers that are going to talk about the Jupiter-Uranus conjunction, the eclipses of the next year, Pluto going back into Aquarius, and not just from one point of view, but from a variety of points of view. And I really enjoyed working with them on this panel some years ago. So I think you guys would enjoy it. I told them I'd be glad to promote it and send you guys over there. So check this 8th annual astrology forecast event for 2024. You can get a free seat to attend live. Follow the link in the description of this video or in the comments section if you want to check it out And I think I'll probably be asking, I have to be somewhere on that day, but I will probably be getting a replay so I can check it out, because I always get a lot of good insight from that event. And I've watched it multiple, not every year, but I've watched it multiple years and really appreciated the voices that come on that panel. Okay, so promotions are done. Intros are done. We're ready to get into the astrology of October. Alex, are you ready?
Oh, let's do it. Let's look at those eclipses.
I know. I feel like the, eclipse season, people always come into eclipse videos with, I feel like there's a lot of anxiety, right? People are like,
I agree.
You know, oh my God. And I feel like, you know, one thing that it helps to remember right away, just from the get-go, is that eclipses are really nothing more than very potent new or full moons with history behind them. They, rather than it being like a lunar cycle that's just one little portion of a year, it's a lunar cycle that fulfills one portion of a year while also having echoes of deeper karmic cycles that go back 9 and 18 years. So it's like every once in a while, every year, you know, we get two sets of eclipses that come through, and those moon cycles aren't just normal moon cycles. They're moon cycles with a bigger history. They're bringing up patterns that have more history behind them. But it's, you know, there's a reason we don't get them every month, because we can't handle looking at that kind of history like every single month.
Every 18 years, one month.
Right, exactly. It's like, yeah. And I feel like, you know, the opportunity to look at things more deeply that have more of a history shouldn't automatically scare us, because there's a real opportunity in them. It's not just about, you know, someone like, you remember when we were kids at school and someone would step behind you and kick your leg so it would like sweep around you and you'd trip. It's like the eclipses aren't just, they're not just like, hey, let's side swipe him, you know?
Sweep the leg.
Yeah, exactly. It's like the eclipse. What's is like the Cobra Kai.
Cobra Kai.
Exactly. So, not what it's all about. Definitely not. I'm going to start with Aries. What we're going to do is we're going to take a look, and then we're going to alternate and chime in as we do with each other's takes as we alternate signs. We're going to look at the Taurus and Libra houses for each sign, because those are where our eclipses are occurring. Here you can see on October 14th, we have the solar eclipse in Libra. And then what I'm going to do is just briefly, I'm going to take this forward to the 28th so you can see the lunar eclipse. So there's the lunar eclipse. You can see it's exactly opposite the sun in Scorpio across the 2nd and 8th. That's October 28th. It's an out of sign eclipse insofar as the nodes aren't in the same sign. North node is in Aries, full moon lunar eclipse is in Taurus, but it still counts. It's still an eclipse. The eclipses don't necessarily care. The nodes don't necessarily care about sign boundaries and how eclipses are created. So you want to pay attention to the house the actual eclipse, the moon is actually falling in as it's eclipsed, and that would be Taurus in this case. So at any rate, I'm gonna back this up to the 14th for every sign, so we kind of are focusing on that Libra look. But we'll just kind of, and rather than move it for every single sign, we'll just remind you on the 28th, the eclipse comes through Taurus. So you're just sort of looking at that whole sign. Anyway, let's start for Aries, and then we'll just we'll go alternate signs and chime in for each other. So with Aries, we start off, the solar eclipse is in the 7th house and the lunar eclipse is in the 2nd. Those are your two, Venusian areas. You know, I've been, thinking a lot about the 2nd house lately because, I've been rereading a text on Indian astrology and the way that Indian astrologers looked at the houses. And in addition to the way we tend to think about it as a place of resources, often money in particular, the Indian astrologers really looked at the 2nd house as all of the assets and resources that you have. For example, the education you receive, the people in your family who become tremendous allies or helpers to you somehow. So it really has a very broad application in Indian astrology, is like anything that acts as a very intimate, personal, and useful resource that helps you develop or grow, or that gives you some kind of asset, inner resource or outer. And when I think about the solar eclipse starting in the 7th, starting a new cycle, right? You've got like a meeting of past themes, old karma, but the beginning of something new with a solar eclipse, and then a lunar eclipse signifying something completing itself around the place of resources. I have to wonder how the people in your life are the people that act as valuable resources are changing or transforming somehow. Either like, for example, if you're in relationship, I could see something super mundane, like your spouse's job changing and the money they provide or the assets or, you know, the resources they bring to the table as a couple is changing. And that impacts what you are expected to give or contribute or something like that. It could be very mundane. But the other thing would be like, what do different people bring as assets or resources to you as an evolving person? You know, people bring different things, or people lack things that you find that you need. People's strengths or weaknesses amplify your own, what you have or don't have. And so I think there's a really interesting connection for Aryans this month. Aries. So every time I say Aryans, astrologers have been using that term for to describe Aries natives, but then you say it comes out talking about Nazis or something. So
let me go back and clarify Aries.
Yeah. Aries, yeah. So, but yeah, when you have this connection between the seventh and second, you could say relationships and resources, right? Those are the areas. Yeah. But I think when you look at the connection between them both being Venus ruled places, and then Venus being in the sixth, that you're thinking about adjustments that have to be made around relationships and how they're tied into psychic inner resources or literal financial material resources.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. I think, you know, I've been thinking a lot about the second house too, in terms of values too, Adam, like value, right? Like what we value and the things that prop us up. And if you take Adam Ellenboss's year one astrology course, you will learn why the second house props up does that. But you know, I've been thinking a lot lately too about Libra, as you know, this Libra Aries axis is ideas about responsibility versus power. And I think like there's this idea in a new moon, super, you know, intense new moon eclipse in Libra, where responsibilities are being reshuffled in relationships that help you reallocate resources to yourself in some way. Some of what Adam was saying, this idea of like different ways you're shifting around, like maybe if you've taken too much responsibility for something, that you're like, you know what, someone else is going to handle that while I prop up my own feeling of that I have resource or other ability to support myself. And that I think that what I love about this October 28th eclipse is that it's widely conjunct Jupiter, and that there's some really powerful exclamation point that is put on this Taurus cycle that we've been through that brings some sense of meaning around it. Like, I know why I went through this last 18 months with the nodes in Taurus and Scorpio, and it's ending with a sense of meaning making around like the resources that I have, why I have them, and how I'm going to put them to good use.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was interesting. There's someone in one of my courses, and I'll just sort of anonymously share this story, who, and this was in front of a whole group, they mentioned that they're in a job where they basically said, if you don't pay me better, I'm going to leave. And, you know, it was kind of this moment of like, here's what I'm worth, and I'm willing to cut ties with someone if my worth isn't reflected in the relationship. And yep. She goes, I'm Aries rising. And I was like, well, there you go. It's like, you know, Mars moving through there right now. So yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Let's go to Taurus.
Awesome. All right. So Taurus risings, you have the eclipse happening in your sixth house. This feels like the beginning of a journey where you begin to recognize where you've maybe had to work really, really hard to maintain some sense of balance and harmony, and how you might begin to unplug from that so that not only you find a little bit of personal relief, but you sort of reallocate who has the power and responsibility within certain relational spheres. And I think that winds up with on October 28th with the lunar eclipse in Taurus, a real sense of grounding in a new identity. And again, with Jupiter there, maybe new belief systems, new cohesive understandings of who you are through your belief systems and your philosophies, and the ways that you have grounded in a new identity. That's something, you know, we've been talking a lot about with Taurus risings over this transit with Jupiter and Uranus in the first house. But I think that it really begins sort of a new exploration of a deeper level with the sixth house stuff of things that might require a little bit more work, things that you have to really dig down to see, things that feel like they take a little bit of a slog, but they're ultimately worth it at the end to land you in a new expression of who you are.
Yeah, I like that. I think also of the sixth house as the things that we're willing to work and sacrifice for. Mm-hmm. And, you know, how is our identity or sense of self changing as we are recognizing either I do or don't want the sacrifice or commitment of something? Because the sixth is sort of like whatever you're working for in there, you're going to shed some, there's blood, sweat, and tears involved. And so is it worth it? Does it align with who I'm becoming or who I'd like to be? And it could also be that we're saying, you know what, there's some things I can't do. Sacrifices I was trying to make or work that I thought I could take on that I'm realizing doesn't fit with this emerging sense of self or a deeper level of comfort I'm feeling with who I am and what I need. So this doesn't align or this does. So that I was thinking about it like that as well.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. That's a really nice way to think about the sixth house too, Adam. It's like sort of that discernment. Right? Like what can I do? What can I do? And there's just certain things we're limited by. We just can't do or don't want to. They don't align with us.
Yeah. It's like there's only a certain amount of frustrating things that I can handle doing, you know?
Exactly. I can only push about four boulders up the hill at the same time after that. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Let's go to Gemini. Gemini on the ascendant takes the eclipse of Libra into the fifth and the eclipse in Taurus into the 12th. It was interesting. I was speaking with a woman recently who has been a speaker at Nightlight. She's an alumni and she's developing a new series that we may end up doing something with on the YouTube channel or maybe another speaker series or something. She was talking about the different dharma of the rising signs. And I just really loved where she was, what she was exploring. But anyway, we ended up talking about Gemini risings for a bit in this conversation we had. And one of the things that I find we both agreed on is that Gemini risings as a matter of character arc or character development will often explore dualities of identity, right? Like for example, one of the things that, you know, may come up is you explore being the good kid versus the dropout or something. Like I attend school and I have perfect attendance. And then I want to play with what it's like to be someone who skips school. But there are all sorts of dualities, right, that can constitute light and dark and the need to like explore different sides of who we are. One of the things that I wonder about for Geminis right now, because Uranus is slowly making its way to the first house for Geminis in just a couple of years, and you get these eclipses with Uranus in the 12th, to me start stirring the drink of like there are rebellious pieces of me, desires I have, instincts that I have. I think of Taurus in the 12th house, like the desire body and the way we are or are not in touch with it, or the, you know, like the shadow of the bull is the minotaur that devours and is like hungry and in the 12th house. So I wonder, you know, to what extent are Geminis right now getting in touch with the shadow impulses, desires, and instincts through the 12th house Taurus eclipses that have been happening. And then simultaneously, when you think about the fifth house, which has such a lucid, clear connection through a trine to the first, and it's this place of creative fulfillment and a place of joy and pleasure that has like it's incorporated a sense of like who we are and what we love and what makes us feel creatively happy. And here we see something new beginning as we're resolving something from the past with the South Node. And then simultaneously this 12th house eclipse. So it makes me wonder if Geminis aren't going through a kind of recalibration of what feels good, what feels creatively fulfilling, and how their creative lives are or are not in touch with shadow elements of their desire body. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. You know, I was thinking like Geminis, when you work with Gemini, strong Gemini placement in a reading, they always want to show you Castor. They never want to show you Pollux.
Right.
There's always like the good twin is Castor. Like, here I am, I'm fun, I'm social, and all this. They don't want to show you Pollux, the dark twin that is a total opposite of that. And I think that, that's part of the journey of Gemini is to explore both. It is to explore in the lightest sign of the year where it comes in the light cycle. There's also the opposing darkness that comes along with it. And I'm also wondering if like there's a sense with Venus in Virgo in the fourth house ruling this eclipse where you're looking back at patterns from your ancestry, your past, where you had to be the best little Venus in the whole world, where there was some sense of impeccability, like I cannot show anybody that darker side of me, which isn't a bad side of me. It's just a different expression of the subconscious.
Right.
And with this eclipse, you know, in Libra, like it's the balance needs to be restored from being very, very, very good to showing like I'm a fully rounded human being here to explore the full nature of light and dark in my incarnation.
Absolutely. And such a mercurial duality that we have with Venus in a Mercury ruled sign ruling the 12th in the fourth. Yeah, I think you're super smart to point out that this could date back to how you felt like you had to show up to be good or acceptable within your family. That's a really, super interesting way of looking at it. Gosh, and if people can hear the like massive thunder, there's like a super thunder and lightning storm going on outside my house. The internet seems okay, so that's good. But I think that's really interesting because I was just like, it was funny. You started talking about the duality and it was like, boom. And I was like, whoa, that's crazy.
Pollux is coming with the darkness.
Here's what's so interesting is like the Mars retrograde in Gemini. I mean, it was like client after client, including myself, a natal Mars in Gemini that were allowing themselves to tap into a Mars that hasn't been acceptable to show. And for me, like that ended up constituting a kind of physical transformation. I was posting more workout videos and there was kind of like almost like leaning into that sort of really intensely because it had been so forbidden in my own psyche to be someone that was interested in working out or posting videos of working out or having, because you don't do those things. You show only this light side of Mars. And I think just what you were saying about Gemini and this being able to incorporate and include sides of ourselves that maybe we think or imagine are not acceptable. That's probably a huge piece of the Gemini rising horoscope.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, with Gemini, it just has that tendency of either or, where Sagittarius is both and.
Yeah,
opposing sign. And so it's just like that you can show one and this and this, but it's both. You're not one or the other.
I love when you put Sagittarius and Geminis in the same room because it's so interesting how the Sagittarius is just sort of like, you know, it's like they're walking around buck naked just being like, well, why don't you just own it, man, you know? And a Gemini finds it so sort of offensive and unrefined, and the Sagittarian finds the Gemini so sort of pretentious and cloaked, you know.
Just show the darkness, dude. Whatever. We rule the darkest time of the year. Like, okay.
Cool. Cancer rising.
All right, Cancer rising. So we have the eclipse happening in your fourth house, that's the October 14th new moon eclipse, and then we have the full moon eclipse, the lunar eclipse happening in your 11th house in Taurus. This is interesting. So, you know, this would be from, you know, the fourth house to me is always an exploration of our ingrained family beliefs, our ingrained family systems, the way we sort of had to comport ourselves in our families, what we inherit from our families. And, you know, with the South Node there, that can go back, you know, not just into your experience in your family of origin, but it can also go back into patterns that may, you know, have been there for a long time, especially with Libra, I find around like keeping things balanced, keeping things harmonious at any cost. No matter what we do, we have to show a good face to the world. We have to make sure there's order. It might be a time where you're feeling like there's a sense of, I am no longer constrained, or I'm transforming a sense of constraint by that feeling of me needing to be harmonious, and I can let myself flow a little bit more freely. Because that's Venus and Virgo's other side that's ruling this eclipse from your third house, is there's a little bit more of a free flow of the goddess on the other side of Virgo, which I think might be something being released into. And then going into a Taurus eclipse in your 11th house, which is a sort of punctuation mark on this exploration of how you interpersonally relate within networks, who's a friend to you, who really supports you and props you up, especially props up how you're seen very visibly in the world. And that's with the 10th house, because the 11th house, you know, in the support of the 10th house. There's a really interesting dichotomy there of something that's worked out within a longer term understanding of family that allows you to begin to, I think, with Jupiter there, receive more benefits and blessings and bigger opportunities to come through you through your social and professional networks.
Right. I feel like with this one, I could also see questions about like family, ancestral or societal norms, especially for women, around the role that you play socially versus domestically. Mm-hmm. You know, like moms, for example, I'm thinking of mothers who are balancing the responsibilities of, say, being a mom and a wife with the desire to connect with like-minded people in the pursuit of your ambitions and dreams professionally. Mm-hmm. I wonder also about like a new cycle beginning around home, family, living environment that also could feel like there's some like regression involved. Like you're having to go back to go forward somehow. You're having to look at things that you thought you were done with, or you're, you know, almost like there's like a family karma that needs to be cleared. And so a new cycle of investigating old patterns is starting. I also wonder about the conclusion of certain, you know, like a period of like when a lunar eclipse comes through the 11th, I think about like a cycle of ambitions coming to a close. Like I've been really ambitious about this or that. I've wanted this or that. And I'm sort of letting that go. Maybe I'm also seeing the connection between some of my ambitions and the history of my family and how those ambitions have been shaped by things that I was raised with, or my ambitions represent some kind of overcompensation for the trauma of my past, or, you know, but anyway, those are some of the, just sort of riffing here off from what you started with.
No, I think that's really true. And I think that, you know, the fourth house is interesting. It might also, riffing off of that, I'm just being something where you're also beginning a new basis for yourself. You know, the base of your chart, you're beginning a sort of brand new cycle that, working through everything we just talked about, initiates something that feels more stable or more true to who you are.
Right. Some way. Home, yeah. Family, living environment, and maybe your broader sense of community, stuff like that too. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Let's go to Leo, and I guess I'll start us off on this one. So we have the Leo rising gets the eclipse of Libra, solar eclipse in the third house, and then you've got the lunar eclipse in your 10th. This is Alex's rising sign. So yeah, one of the things that, you know, I think it's important when you have eclipses in the third house, that it's almost like the way I think about it is almost like if you take fish out of a tank and you give them a new aquarium to swim in, or if you take a plant and put it in a new pot, there's kind of like an environmental transplant, and it's serving the goal or purpose of creating more harmony. It's like, well, this is a more ideal environment, or this is a better space within which to achieve various goals. The environment might be reshuffled on for the sake of different professional or creative aspirations signified by the eclipse in the 10th house. I also think about the desire to shift things in the environment so that more people are happy, or that there's a kind of, like, it's like a diplomatic reshuffling of the environment or of patterns in everyday life that kind of serve a greater harmony. I could see this as the adjusting of life as you, you know, take in new roommates or start living with someone and you have to rearrange the kitchen, or, you know, you have to it's almost like when kids go back to school and you're figuring out a carpool system for, you know, or something like that. So this is almost like, A new, a new paradigm is needed for the functioning of everyday life, to temper extremes or to eliminate old patterns that aren't working any longer. But also this reshuffling is part of a deeper cycle of fulfillment and completion that's happening in the public and professional house. So that's really interesting. You could almost see that as like also like maybe someone's getting a new office, or they're taking a new route to work, or they're working in a different department or building or something. So I could see kind of like a connection between the everyday environment changing. Of course, karma around siblings, neighbors, you know, people that sort of exist around your living environment somehow, or everyday life could be changing. And then things kind of coming to a cycle coming to closure or resolution in the career house.
Yeah. It's interesting that you bring that up, because like, you know, as a Leo rising, I'm one of the things I'm considering right now is just super mundane and easy, but I want to get back to doing in-person energy work. So I'm looking for an office space, right? I've been working out of my house exclusively for the last 3 years. And while it's wonderful and I love working from home, it's there's something about it where I'm like, you know, I really want to get back to see clients in person. I've even been teaching more yoga classes lately just because I like getting back out into a different environment and shaking that up, which is all about what I do for work. So I think it's, you know, it's interesting. I think also, you know, one thing I've been reflecting on a lot about this third house eclipse and just having Mars's transit through Libra too is the exaltation of Saturn, Libra, the exaltation of Saturn, there often can be, without realizing it, a deep desire for some kind of control in Libra. And I think it's not often spoken about with the balance, but like, we're going to control the, we're all going to have harmony and goddammit, we're going to like it. That sort of feeling, right? Yeah. You know, it's like, and there's a little bit here where I've been noticing for myself, like, you know, in my environment, I can loosen up a little bit. I've had such control over my environment for so long. It's like, you know what? It's okay. It's going to, you know, I can loosen the grip a little bit around that. And this is speak some with three planets in Virgo and a Libra moon. That's not always the easiest thing to do. But I think that there is some refreshment that is coming in here around what just has, you might not have even seen around you until it gets shaken a little bit. You're like, oh, I could loosen up on that. I could try that. I could do this a little bit differently, especially with the wide square to Pluto. That really helps with that too.
Yeah. And also it, I mean, if we look at the ruler, you know, Venus and Virgo in the second, it also makes me wonder if the shift we are doing has something to do with, you know, more wisely allocating our resources or trying to create more of a harmony of how our energy works. For example, and I don't know if this is true or not, but I know that I need a place, I work from home, you know, and I need a place that really feels separate from the rest of the house where I work. Because otherwise the energy of doing, you know, healing astrological counseling can kind of spill over into my like home life, you know?
Yep.
So I feel like the Venus in Virgo in the second is like, this is how I would like things to go. This is like Venus in Virgo, as you know, many people know, is very particular about, and almost so particular that it's hard to live up to, which is why Venus in Virgo is frequently described as disappointed or crestfallen or all this kind of depression language. But, you know, in my opinion, you know, some of the finest artists, like you think of one of my clients who's like a world-renowned stylist. You think of Martha Stewart, Venus in Virgo people. It's if Venus in Virgo people can live with things not being perfect, it's like an amazingly, it's a crafty Venus placement that can be like a master artistic craftsman or something. If you think about that in the second house, Venus in Virgo is sort of like, this is how I want things to go so that energy and resources are flowing effectively.
Yeah.
So it's almost like that's an underlying motivation around work and the environment right now for Leos.
You know, I say with Virgo a lot with clients, remember it's the harvest sign. And that even the most abundant harvest can be squandered if it's not organized properly, if you don't allocate things, if you don't have, you know how many carrots and how many potatoes and how much you have in certain spaces. So it's a wonderful reorganizational process that ultimately can be long-term very beneficial here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or on resources. Yeah.
Well, speaking of Virgos, let's put Virgo on the ascendant. We'll do that next.
All right. So Venus, interesting. All right. So this is for Virgo risings. You're going to have the solar eclipse in Libra in your second house. This would be around, you know, if you've heard some of the stuff we've talked about around the second house, a new cycle in how you view and hold your sense of resource and value and the things that sort of hold up your identity and help you be powerful in the world. It can easily relate to money, but it can relate to other resources and sense of value as well. And maybe with Libra too, like a place where you've felt like you've had to hold a lot together, or hold a sense of balance or harmony at all costs, where it's like somehow something begins to loosen up a little bit more, where it's like, if I look at this a slightly different way, or if I allow something that was out of balance to come back into balance, I somehow have a lot more at my disposal. And that might come with a lunar eclipse in your ninth house, a reshuffling of your beliefs, a reshuffling of the way you order things, a reshuffling of the way that you make sense of those ideas around your allocation of resources, or the way that you're handling or working with your resources. It could also be, just with the ninth house, something that comes from overseas. That's the house of foreign travel. There's something that comes here that is like from a foreign land or from far away that is assisting you in that process by bringing something in that ninth house, like the formation of a new meaning-making system, helps you with this reallocation of resources, thinking about the way you use your resources differently, with more flexibility, maybe.
Yeah, I like that a lot. And I think about Venus, the ruler of both eclipses, being, in Virgo in the first house. One of the things that comes to my mind is having to be reconciled to ourselves just the way that we are. So very like the worst of Venus and Virgo in the first house would be, you're not beautiful enough, you're not valuable enough, you're not worthy enough, you're not living up to some ideal standard, and I can't possibly accept the messiness of being an embodied soul in the material world. That's one of the things that Venus and Virgo can struggle with, or even like anxiety about how beautiful or attractive or appealing or worthy of love I am, or something like that. So if you think about there being maybe some work on self-esteem, self-image, self-love, Or even the opposite, where Venus, Venus in the first house, even though the dignity might be challenging, could be about saying, I'm reconciling myself to the way that I am and feeling really good about it. Maybe that's how people are feeling. So it doesn't have to be bad. But the point is that there's sort of like a reconciliation with self happening. And as I see that is happening at the same time that some kind of an adjustment is happening around money or resources. And at the same time, there's almost like the conclusion of some kind of paradigm, like a belief system or a way of seeing the world, or maybe seeing yourself in the world because of a belief system. I mean, belief systems inform the way we think about ourselves as much as they inform the way we think about the cosmos. And so some intersection between our beliefs, how we see love or lack love for ourselves, and the, again, something like the allocation of our time, our money, our energy, our resources, our values. Those are the shifting pieces right now, as far as we can tell here with these three houses.
With that Venus and Virgo, Adam, riffing off of that, my former therapist used to say something really interesting. She never said secure attachment. She said good enough attachment. It's like, which I always loved, it's like, because I think even when we're doing healing work with Venus and Virgo around the self, there can be this like sense of it has to be perfect. I have to be perfectly done. I have to be perfectly healed. And there's enough that gets us to a place where we can enjoy ourselves. And there's always going to be some amount of messiness in being human. And I think that's an interesting line that'll be told this month around the sense of self for Virgos.
Yeah. I find that sometimes, for example, the same thing will carry over with money. Yeah. People will say, when will I ever have the financial reality that I want? And one of the questions I'll start with, in not meaning to be trite, is just, have you ever been like in a state of total, lack? Like if you've always, and it turns out that a lot of people, I mean, some people haven't, but most people are like, if they reflect on it, like, oh, I've always been okay. I've always somehow made it. And I think that a lot of the times, even if someone's finances are about to be augmented somehow by an astrological transit, the same anxiety will still be there if we haven't addressed it, which is that there's a good enough that we all have to get in touch with around our material state, you know?
Agreed.
And maybe that's part of it for Virgos this month too, is like, you're okay. You know, it's interesting, really, really interesting. Mm. My daughter, my 7 going on 8-year-old is a Virgo rising. And at bed recently, Mars is going through the second house. At bedtime, which is when kids often dump, right? It's like amazing. Yeah. You ask at dinner, how was your day? Nothing. Right before bed, let me tell you my whole life story. So, right, she's at bedtime and she said, I'm really worried about money. And I was like, we don't discuss our finances with our kids. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, we'll bring them into that reality probably a little later and teach them about money and stuff. We've taught them very basic things like saving a little bit and give them some chores and stuff. They can earn a little bit of, you know, so we've done some little things, but she said, how do you know that you're going to keep making money and that you'll be okay? Mm-hmm. And this was not her asking me, this was like an existential question. Sure. Like, how do you how do you ever know that you're secure with it? And I just thought that was like, I was like, wow, that's like such a Mars in her second house question at 7, you know? And so I told her, I said, well, you don't. And I said, but there's two different ways of thinking about wealth. And I said, one is that there's money in the world that facilitates material things, you know? And that's really tentative. For most people, they live with a lot of uncertainty around it. And you learn to live with that anxiety because that kind of wealth can come and go and you just, you don't know. And for some people, that worry or anxiety is a lot more than for other people. And that's a really interesting part of this world. Some people have a lot. Some people don't have as much. Uh-huh. It's not always fair. And she was like, well, why? You know, she's Mars in Libra. Like, why isn't it perfectly balanced? And
and I will fight to make it balanced. If it's
balanced. Exactly.
Yeah.
And then I go, well, I said the other kind of wealth is soul wealth.
Right.
And that's the wealth of our friendships, our relationships, our creativity, you know, the way we enjoy ourselves with our family members, the things that you love. And that's a kind of wealth that you can build up. And most people will feel more secure with that because those are things that, you know, you get to you have a little bit more control over inside of your heart. So we were talking about that and that concept and she really grasped it like right away. And I just thought, wow, this is so Mars going through her second house as a 7-year-old, you know?
It's amazing how you see the archetypes, even like in a question you would never think your 7-year-old daughter would ask you, how you see the archetype illuminated in her mind, right? Gets highlighted all of a sudden in the way she's thinking. So interesting.
Yeah. Well, anyway, that was a big digression, but hopefully useful for Virgos out there.
Yeah.
Let's go on to Libra. For Librans, well, the eclipse is in your first house. Let me actually I'm going to back the chart up by just one day. Here we go.
Where's the big circle, man? I can't deal with these like flimsy little thin circles.
I'm gonna bring it out just for fun.
We're gonna. Okay.
I can control it. No, that's funny. I change it, and now it's like, no, I'm not going to.
No,
I'm not gonna do what you think.
Said you didn't want me. Fine. There we go. Okay.
There we go.
Now I can work.
Solar eclipse in your first house as a Libra, lunar eclipse in your 8th. I love this one for Librans because I've over the years, I have made special note out of people who have their luminaries in Libra in the first, sun or moon, and Taurus in the 8th. And it's a really interesting pattern that I've observed, in part because there's some people that are closer to me in my life that have the luminaries in those two houses. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I'll say about the combination of these houses for Libra rising in particular is that this has the 8th house is called the esteem of other people. And Librans as a Libra rising, like character arc, one of the biggest things that Libra risings are often developing is an inner subjective sense of soul that is not rooted in adherence to societal norms, standards of virtue, principles of morality, images of beauty. Like you won't find people that are classier, more refined, poised, intelligent, and sort of socially aware than Librans. And that's their gift. But you also won't find people who are more all of those things than Librans, which sometimes occludes a sense of self that is not sort of dictated by like sort of social geometry, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
The soul is not a perfect triangle, in other words. Mm-hmm. The soul may like triangles or circles or, you know, like ideal shapes, but the soul is a mediating ground for images like triangles and circles. It isn't a triangle or circle. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's a circle. That would be the closest shape I could think of for a soul, but mm-hmm. you get the idea. And I think that what Librans often go through when there's stuff happening in the second and eighth, first and eighth simultaneously is a retrieval of identity from the grips of where you feel most obligated, indebted, or tied to other people and what they expect from you.
Oh my God. Clap. Slow clap. Right? Yes. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. You know, it's true. I just have a Libra moon and I was like, yeah, I'm not even the first house, but that's something I've definitely been aware of my whole life. Thank you, Adam. Thank you. Yep. The big arrow too. Thank you.
You're all welcome.
I just feel so seen.
You're all welcome.
Adam sees you guys. He sees you. He knows you need the big arrow there.
That's right.
But you know, it's interesting. I would say with Libra risings, a lot of times I'm always thinking like who you are is not up for committee vote. It's not up for like debate amongst other people or how you feel you're in balance with other people, which can be the shadow of it, which is like you feel like you're tap dancing a lot. Like, well, this person needs this from me, but this person needs this from me. And a lot of in the extreme end of it, kind of like putting out fires everywhere. Like, okay, well, mm-hmm. this just went to shit, but let me make sure this person's okay and running around. And I think with that lunar eclipse in the eighth house, you know, riffing off what you're saying, Adam, there's this idea of kind of like putting to bed the need to feel obligated to do that, that people can take care of themselves, that who they are is who they are, who you are is who you are. And that when you focus that as a Libra rising, like you said, there's a real poise and elegance and sense of unassuming power that comes from the locking in of that balance within yourself rather than trying to find the balance and kind of tap dancing around for what other people need you to be or what you think they need you to be.
Right. Especially with Venus in Virgo in the 12th during this mm-hmm. time. It's like, mm-hmm. turns out I'm a little slutty and I like to get it on in the copy machine room. You know, there's like something that's sort of like hidden, maybe inappropriate. It's not the Venus right. you want to show to the world, but it's like, this is a moment where Librans could be like, well, damn what other people think, you know? Yeah. And I think that might be a good thing. You would want to be really careful during this time of adjusting who you are based on, you know, this sort of hidden paranoid obsession with how people are judging you or how they're thinking about you, which can present, yes. you know, Venus in the 12th could sort of present yeah. as like your worries about what other people think. So I think that along with the eighth house eclipse is speaking to extricating yourself from various social expectations that you've somehow adopted, you know, that maybe aren't the best somehow.
Yeah, it's interesting, you know, just I've always seen with people with Venus and Virgo when they get an outer planetary hard aspect to that Venus and Virgo, exactly what you said happens. There's a secret hidden place that wants to be expressed. I finally want to do what I want to do as opposed to what I expect other people expect me to do. And that's, I think, something that might be explored here, especially with the eighth house involved in that way.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's go to Scorpio.
All right. So Scorpio risings, you have the solar eclipse happening in your
just kidding.
You have it happening in every house all the time for the next month. In your 12th house, you have the solar eclipse in your 12th house, you have the lunar eclipse in your 7th house. This to me, you know, if I take a really easy
he's giving a frowny like
this is what I don't have to say anything. This is the demonstration of what the eclipse will be. It's a what just happened? All right. So Libra, that's an exploration, I think, of unconscious material, things that have been in the back of your mind, in the darker areas of your psyche where you may not have seen that relate to as they're explored or they're begun, or the older, with the South Node there, the older aspects of the subconscious are brought to light and healed. It has a fairly I think with Jupiter there, fairly positive effect on relationships, your relational style, how you interrelate with either your primary partners or your dating life, or even just with people around you. I think that, you know, Scorpios are often by their nature very comfortable in the dark and very comfortable being in their sort of like their inner space. I think that a eclipse in Libra is really interesting in the 12th house, because I think it might look at spaces where is a sign that can feel like it has to be controlled in some way. Like, again, you've had subconscious tendencies where there had to be control, lots of responsibility, where you're like, oh, fuck it, I'm letting that go. That allows me to loosen up a little bit more in relationships, to relate with a little bit more fun in my life, in your life. Some ideas coming out from that, but I like that lunar eclipse is happening right next to Jupiter. I feel like there's a whole new cohesion of belief coming in around relationship during this cycle.
Yeah.
For Scorpios.
I like to think about the relationship between the first sign and the 12th sign as like dueling archetypes that are vying for, you know, like the center of importance in the personality. Mm-hmm. So, for example, Scorpio. Let's just say that Scorpio, as a kind of just like deep autumnal feminine sign of Mars, the character arc usually has something to do with the need for, let's call it spiritual development, because a lot of people who are into astrology are going to be concerned about that kind of development, that the spiritual development incorporate both upward and downward paths simultaneously. Mm. So the upward path might be prayer. The downward path might be sex. But both can be deliver the same effect. You know, there's, and like Scorpio is sometimes going to be like wrestling with dragons and serpents and primordial energies and trying to somehow incorporate and include. And there's a kind of rage that gets stirred up in a Scorpio if you try to exclude something that is, you know, more. If you try to exclude the primordial and just overcome it and like slay the dragon, the hero is always killed by the scorpion, right? You know what I mean? Like the hero is always being hit in the heel, clipped with the stinger in the heel, because the sort of the Achilles heel of the hero is the inability to accept darkness as a fundamental part of the divine. And so Scorpio risings are always like, nope, it's part of it. And I'd have to include it as a part of who I am somehow. And there's this struggle that takes place with those, the primordial waters within, making sense of them. Well, Libra's not about that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, so if you think about the Libran archetype in the 12th house is going to be more like, I am the presence of, high culture and class and the justice system and the courts and the democracy and the house of the Senate and like the refinement of like colleges and universities and like Libra has this sense of being like, oh, we've slayed the dragons of our lower instincts and we have this nice social order that's working. And like, okay, so on the one hand, you could see that in the 12th house, there are going to be times at which that just doesn't make sense for what a Scorpio rising is trying to deal with. You know, it's like a Scorpio rising may look at that and say, oh my God, that's all so superficial. You know, I'm diving into the waters and wrestling with serpents and you're, you know, you're sitting there like Barbie, you know, trying to create the perfect world. And something about you feels very phony, you know?
Yeah.
So there's this like hatred of things that are phony that is actually sometimes like a polarizing unconscious blind spot for Scorpios. And that's the sort of Libran 12th. But on the other hand, you have this need for the incorporation of Libra. Like, you know, if you're around Scorpio rising, sometimes you're like, God damn it, would you just incorporate a little bit of Libra rather than like pressing the nuclear switch all the time? Like, you know, like, can you have, and so sometimes the thing is that Scorpios need to incorporate more Libran sensibility as a way of navigating social situations with less sort of primordial chaos involved.
Right.
So it's like, I could see this going in either direction where the eclipse is like, look, you need a little bit more refinement in how you're doing things because you're triggering detonations in relationships. You're disturbing the peace. And that's the eclipse in the seventh. And the eclipse of the 12th is like, let's help you refine and become a little bit more balanced and careful and tactical socially. On the other hand, you know, let's just say that this shows up as facades in relationships mm-hmm. that you can't tolerate any longer. So you could see it kind of going in either direction.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's a very kind of Holden Caulfield's kind of feeling with Scorpio, the phonies, right? You know, there's they're and like sometimes it's like, you know what, dude? Sometimes people are just having dinner, you know, like they're not, they're not, you know, like there's that pressing need for it. I love that. Yeah, I think that that'd be an interesting dichotomy.
Well, you know, that's why I love that scene so much from Into the Wild, where the young man who's rejecting the world is sitting in a restaurant with what's the guy's name? I'm forgetting the actor's name. Oh, I can see him. He was in Wedding Crashers with Owen Wilson. What was his name? I'm trying to remember. Vince Vaughn. Yeah. He's sitting at the table with Vince Vaughn, you know, and he goes, he's like, yeah, man, I got to get out of this place, you know, society. And then they start ratcheting up society, you know, and you look around, everyone in the restaurant's going like this, you know, it's like, he's probably a Scorpio rising, guys. Like,
exactly. You're all fake, man. You're all part of the system, man.
Exactly. So, anyway, all right, let's go on to Sagittarius. And in Sagittarius, we have the solar eclipse in the 11th with big circle, and the lunar eclipse in Taurus with big circle. And I think, you know, first of all, for an 11th house eclipse, I almost always think about the kinds of people that we surround ourselves with. And with the South Node here, maybe there's the need to start something new or initiate a new cycle, the need to create some kind of transformation. But this is because we have reached a turning point with respect to patterns from the past and what choices we've made around social interactions, allies, friends, groups of people, patterns from the past around those topics coming up, and the opportunity to start something new or to delve, you know, kind of like peel back another layer of the onion with respect to our sense of social standing, status, who friends are and aren't, who allies are and aren't. And really there's history behind what's going on in that house right now with the South Node. At the same time, you've got a Taurus eclipse in the sixth place, while the ruler Venus is also in the 10th, makes me wonder about seasons of work and sacrifice. So, you know, the sixth house almost always has to do with what we are in the process of willingly sacrificing for, right? I'm willing to be frustrated by having to slowly learn how to speak a language or learn a craft or what. There's kind of sixth house has sometimes been described as apprenticeship. And insofar as apprenticeship is the frustrating art of persevering in trying to learn or do something or get good at something, that's a very sixth house topic. But also the sixth house is what we are and aren't willing to hurt for, you know? Yeah. So if you think about that, along with the 11th house, it's like, not just what are we willing to hurt or not hurt for, but who are we willing to do it with? You know, like which people are the right people and which acts of sacrifice or work or labor are the right ones?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting when I'm teaching yoga teachers, there's always the first two or three weekends, people are going through a process. I can't remember whose scale this is, but it's called conscious incompetence, where you realize what you don't know. And it's a frustrating, necessary part of the learning process where you're sort of putting everything together. And I'm wondering if there's something going on in the sixth house there that's coming to a completion, like there's a coming into a greater sort of flow of understanding with that lunar eclipse that happens on the 28th. That somehow is related to the beginning of a new cycle in, you know, really picking the people who really support harmony and balance in your life and have your best interests at heart and how you're publicly viewed. And that, you know, it's okay for you also in the public view with Venus sitting right there in Virgo at the top of your chart to be seen as less than perfect. It actually can make us feel more relatable, more at ease, people feel more at ease with us. to be seen as, you know, I am a human being too, who does my best and strives for excellence, but I also have my own stuff that I'm working with too.
Right. And it could be also that, I mean, another way of looking at it, we were talking earlier about the Sagges being the ones who are comfortable, you know, just walking around nude, like, what? You know, I'm a centaur. You know, like, just like the drunk half naked guy at the Renaissance Festival,
right?
You know, got a flagon of ale, or his beer pouring, you know, down his beard or something. What do you think? Who cares?
It's my God given right. No,
so you could see all of these as also tempering your social appearance. The very same things that we're talking about that could help you feel more free to be less than perfect could also be seen as the realization that you need to adapt or change how you're presenting and set some boundaries, or, you know, meet some other people's expectations. And that could be the sacrifice that's difficult but worth it right now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Okay, let's go to Capricorn and
Capricorn. Okay, so Capricorn, we have the solar eclipse happening in your 10th house. And the lunar eclipse happening in your fifth house in Taurus. You know, I think with Capricorn, I think Adam, you and I have talked about this before, but Capricorn's letting themselves enjoy in some way. So I'm thinking about, like, in your career, a new cycle that's beginning. If we look at just the 10th house as career, like from that standpoint, that there's a beginning of a cycle where, like, maybe something that has had to feel like you've had to hold a lot of responsibility or a lot of balance, or you're really working hard to keep the harmony, that there, and there's a little bit of history behind needing to do that, that's starting to break loose in favor of also recognizing that you can enjoy things in life. There are creative things you can bring into your life, but that's a really necessary expression for us as human beings, is our creative pursuits, which is this fifth house idea. And I think that, you know, being ruled by Saturn and having, you know, this sense of wanting the sense of things to be very, very orderly and stable, there might be, I really feel, Adam, like this eclipse in Libra might be a call to be like, you know, it's okay if things are a little bit off balance, or it's okay if, like, you're not totally holding responsibility for something, and you allow yourself some creative pursuit, some ability to move towards a more creative sphere of life that gives you a sense of pleasure, and that not everything has to be held in a harmonious space all the time, that that's okay.
I love that. Yeah, I love that. I also think about you know, it's interesting that, you know, Capricorns often live with the sense that Capricorn risings, but the sense that their life and their identity is a cross that has to be bared.
Yes.
You know, and then you think about the pressure of Libra in the 10th, the exaltation of Saturn. It doesn't get any easier with the kinds of expectations that are up there in the public sphere for Cap risings either. You know, yeah. There's a lot of pressure. I think about Taurus in the fifth as like a release valve.
Exactly.
You know, it's like, okay, well, here's where the sensual creative dimension of life, where you just get to be like grazing and, you know, sort of on the lazy river. Yeah. That's there. Then Venus is in the ninth. And I wonder if Venus in the ninth isn't bringing up our belief systems, and whether the belief system isn't informing the level of strictness or rigidity that we have about pleasure, about performance, about social expectations, about personal expectations. I see Venus in the ninth, along with the eclipse in the fifth, maybe, like, again, the release valve idea being like, take the pressure off. You're just a little human with a body, and it's okay to also, like, you know, get off the roller coaster and get on the lazy river ride.
Right. And I think, and adding to that, I think with Capricorns, it's important to remember, like, other people are capable too. They'll be okay. When you take that responsibility off you, they'll be okay. They may not do it exactly the way you do it, but they're capable of handling that themselves, you know?
Right. Perfectly said.
Yeah.
We'll go on to Aquarius, where we get the big circle eclipses in your ninth and fourth. And, you know, Aquarius is another interesting rising sign. And I actually love that Aquarius deals with Capricorn in the 12th. It's like two different versions of Saturn vying for dominance in the personality, if we use that example I gave earlier. Because with Aquarians, there's this, okay, on the one hand, you have this kind of, I love the phrase that Aquarians love humanity but hate people. Like such a perfect way of describing it. It's kind of, you know, it's a little cynical, so it's not entirely true, but there's a way in which Aquarius has the loftiest sense of what human beings are capable of, but in the first house may have zero sense of how they are a human, you know? So there's this dichotomy between seeing the highest potential of humanity at large, but then sometimes having a difficult time seeing how I as an individual am a human. And and then often the dichotomy between what humans are capable of and who I am as an individual human becomes a source of drama or tension. And, you know, the Capricorn is interesting because although Capricorn is a Saturn ruled sign, Capricorn is so much more about bearing, like we said, bearing the cross or the heaviness or the weightiness of being a human. Mm-hmm. And sometimes hyper responsibility or overworking or taking oneself too seriously. Right. But then that's such a interesting, it's very different from Aquarius that sometimes can't take themselves seriously because they can't take themselves at all. They don't, it's, there's like a more of a dissociation between the ideal human and me as a human. Yeah. And so I think what's really interesting to me is that when you look at Taurus, which is such an embodied place, that's the place of home, family, roots. And for Aquarians right now, there might be some way in which, you know, your living environment, your home, your history has something to teach you or offer you or provide you a contrasting image of what it means to be alive. It's, you know, like, for example, my daughter, my younger daughter is an Aquarius rising. She goes to school and man, is she in her head about the whole thing. It's like immediately I can just see her. She's just tripping out socially. She gets back home and in the sphere of home with parents and family, you know, it's like, oh, there she is, back, right back in her body.
Yep. Yep.
Do you know what I mean? And that's the first house, fourth house with Aquarius Taurus. I wonder if there isn't, first of all, just for Aquarians, especially with Pluto entering the first house again in the new year, if there isn't a story being told right now about embodiment and reconciling yourself as a human to your body, while at the same time still holding and developing your belief in your highest potential, your orientation intellectually, spiritually, philosophically is being developed and evolving in the ninth house. But it has to do so at the same time that there's some ability to anchor into the body in the fourth house. That's what I'm seeing.
I love that. You know, and thinking about like Aquarians, like you bring an Aquarian to a party and they're musing on what's a party? Like, why are we here? What are we doing? Like, what's the party about? Like, why are we having coffee? Why do we drink tea? Like there's all this, like, you know, because that removed, you know, outside space of Saturn looking in. And I think that there's something here about with balance, and I'm just kind of putting this all together holistically as I look at it, like your individual needs as an Aquarius also matter. Who you are in the enjoyment of your life and being in interaction with someone as individuals is also important. And sometimes I think there's something about Libra helping with a balance in that sense, a new era of belief systems around balance in that sense, about like, I get to be existentially aware of the world, but I also get to inhabit the world at the same time and inhabit my, because I often find with Aquarians, they really want to connect, even though there's a sense of wanting to be solitary, but they're not quite sure how to overcome that cerebral interaction with things. Yeah.
Especially when it gets superhuman. My five-year-old, again, she's in pre-K right now. She comes home and you know what her big problem was? So social dilemmas, all sorts. But one of the things she goes is, what do I do when I accidentally see someone's butt? Because, you know, kids at school, whatever, they're itching their butts or whatever. Yeah. She said, well, so he was itching his butt and I could see his bottom crack, you know? And I first of all, she was so sincere. What do I do?
Yeah.
you know? And I thought it was like so adorable. And I was like, and that is so Aquarian. You
know? It is. Like, it is. What does one do when they see a butt crack? What does one do? What does it mean in the world?
Obviously, like, you know, she knows, like, at home we've taught her about, like, you know, the respecting private parts and stuff like that. Exactly. So she knows that. So now she's like, well, shit, there's a butt crack. And it was like, I was like, well, you know what? That's going to happen. You know, interestingly, I was at Target and I saw someone bending over and they had a big butt crack I could see. And I just got I got a little embarrassed seeing it. But then I thought, well, it's just human. Everyone has a body. It's okay.
Right.
You know, so we're walking her through this kind of stuff. I just thought, oh my gosh, this is so perfect though, because she's got Mars in Libra going through the ninth house she's in school, you know, and she's wrestling with these things about, you know, social standards and norms and whatever. And then there's this Taurus energy going on. Like, what about the actual skin, you know? Anyway, let's go on to our last sign and always our favorite, which is Pisces. We have the eclipse in the eighth and the eclipse in the third.
I think, you know, looking at this again, kind of holistically, and Venus in Virgo actually ruling this Libra eclipse really stands out to me. I'm thinking of, you know, Good Will Hunting is one of my favorite movies. When Robin Williams says to Matt Damon, you're not perfect and I got news for your support, she's not either. But are you perfect for each other? I think with Pisces, there's something around with an eighth house eclipse and Venus in the seventh house and then a concluding lunar eclipse in the third house, something around the recognition of the ideal is not necessarily the goal. The thing that you've created in relationship and how you interact with other people, maybe how you feel obligated to an ideal or responsible for holding the harmony of an ideal together that's been created. You can let go of some of that responsibility, and there's somewhat of the interaction again on a human level of, I just get to be the free-flowing goddess in my relationships. I get to be in the sort of messy incarnation of humanity, and I'm not obligated to hold up some sort of standard of ideal perfection or feel like other people are obligated to hold that up to me. And with that concluding eclipse in the third house of like something that may have been happening without even you realizing it until something stirred the pot enough in your environment where you were recognizing like there's the right relationship, there's not the perfect relationship. There's the right interaction, there's not the perfect interaction. There's the ideal we create in our mind sometimes doesn't even live up to the joy of living a wonderful interpersonal human relationship with each other. It's kind of what comes to mind for that.
Yeah. Yeah. Amen. That was really good. That gets my... Start the clap. Yep.
We each get a slow clap.
That's it, man. I have to say, you know, that the idea here that you could, Pisceans could experience disappointment with someone else. But you know what? That disappointment could be the best possible thing that could happen. Because where there's disappointment, you have a choice. The disappointment can clarify and the standard that is not met, or that's been, you know, the reason for the disappointment could lead you to get out of a relationship, for example.
Yep.
On the other hand, the disappointment could allow you to have a more realistic understanding of yourself and others, and also be an opportunity for self-reflection. Well, am I so perfect? You know, especially with Saturn in your first house, like, am I any better than anyone else, really? Mm-hmm. And then, maybe also grace, like wherever people disappoint us and our standards, there's an opportunity to let our standards be more flexible and graceful and forgiving. And we bring that in through forgiveness. And so if we can forgive someone else, and that may also be the gateway for actually growing in intimacy, because the choice to forgive and the choice to let our standards be more flexible is also the choice for self-forgiveness, right? Because we're gonna need to be forgiven at some point, and we probably already do need it, you know? So it's funny how that act of like disappointment can be this mirroring moment of forgiveness and self-acceptance.
Agreed. A softening.
Yeah,
for sure.
Well, we got through it. We did it.
Happy eclipse season, everybody.
Yeah. Happy eclipse season. I want to tell you guys where you can learn more about Alex and his amazing work. So I'm going to put up his Instagram, which is Alex Amorosi Healing on Instagram, makes regular astrology content. You can follow him there, as I do. And then go to alexamorosi.com if you want to book a reading or a session, a healing session. Is there anything else you have coming up, Alex? I know you have a newsletter as well.
I have a newsletter. If you go on my website, you go to the bottom of the website, you'll be able to sign up for my email list. And I do every month I do a new and a full moon newsletter. And sometimes when there's a really major transit, I'll do one about that too. Yeah. And that's something I've gotten really regularly into. So that's a big thing. And other than that, no, I'm doing my readings and I'm loving seeing people. And it's such a great, astrology is just so amazing to be able to help people with that tool. It really is. I'm so blessed.
Yeah. I have to say, by the way, the puppy has been sound asleep the whole time.
Oh, hi, sweetie.
Yeah, she's been totally just like passed out on the floor. She perked up a little bit when we went through Gemini because there was this big crack of thunder and she was like, what the fuck was that? And then
the twins have come.
I know. I know. And then she was like, okay, I'm going back to sleep.
Whatever, man. I'm tired. Yeah, cool.
Yeah. Well, thank you for being here, Alex. We appreciate you. Thanks, thank you, everybody, for listening. I hope you guys have a great month. We will be seeing you for more content as the week unfolds, and we will be looking at the eclipses in greater depth from an archetypal standpoint as they approach. So stay tuned for more, and we hope you guys have a great month of October. Take it easy, everyone.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.